Over the last 5 years, Child Protective Services underreported 655 deaths of children from abuse or neglect by their parents. This shocking information was uncovered by an investigation by the Austin American-Statesman. The reporters found that practically half of the underreported deaths happened in problem families, which frequently had been investigated for child abuse. Over a quarter of the families, 144 of them, where a child died had been investigated by the CPS at least three times. And in one case, the CPS had contacted a family more than 20 times, but still the child in that family died. And there's much more. We're going to be talking about systematic problems at Child Protective Services and revelations brought about by the discovery of this data. And we invite you to participate with your questions and comments. Call in. The number is 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet us at @tprsource. With us to talk about this is the two reporters who wrote and broke the story. Andrea Ball, in the past, she's worked on some of the big stories that the Statesman's had about state health and human services, but now she's an investigative reporter there. Eric Dexheimer, he's an investigative reporter for the Statesman. Welcome to The Source, both of y'all.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
So, Andrea, let me ask you about, we'll get to all this stuff. There's a lot of information to unpack here, and blows me away, the stuff you guys found out. Where this information first came from? Talk about that.
We had, sometime last year, learned about these public reports that are available to anybody that provide information about child fatalities caused by abuse or neglect. Those had been available to the public since 2009 after a law was passed by Senator Carlos Uresti from San Antonio. And so we asked for all of them that were available to us, and we got 779 of those. And as we read through every one of those, we began to see different patterns, and some of them being the number of times that families were visited by Child Protective Services before the death, sometimes how often boyfriends and girlfriends were involved in all of this, the types of deaths. And so we basically built with our team a database, broke it all down for us, so we were able to look at different trends and patterns and put it together in a story.
This seems to be a great data journalism piece that you guys have put together. Eric, when you saw this treasure trove of information that the CPS had been sitting on, what did you think?
Well, we knew that it would yield some story. We didn't know what the story would be. As Andrea said, we only observed the patterns after going through all of them. The difficulty in assembling the database is that these reports are produced individually in PDFs, you know, like individual pages. So they would range from 3 to 30 pages. And so to create the database, it wasn't just a matter of kind of filling in boxes. We had to read each one of these, which are written in narrative form, and then pull out the information that we needed. And so, I mean, at the very least, we knew that it would be a detailed look at a system that, you know, inspires a lot of emotion and that is can be devastatingly sad and, you know, is worth looking at no matter what you see. But as Andrea said, we did observe some of these patterns that were not necessarily being observed by the state itself.
So, Andrea, Senator Uresti fought for this law, passed the law requiring CPS to put out these reports. And what was CPS doing with these reports?
Well, they really weren't required to do much with them, so they didn't do anything with them. The law basically said that the state had to produce a report for every child that was determined to have died of abuse and neglect. And essentially what they did was they completed them, and then they were filed away. Senator Uresti said that he wanted to have those documents, you know, used for possible trend analysis or looking for patterns or even just available so they were being transparent to the public about what was going on. And they were available, and we did ask for them.
So data analytics is something that we hear a lot about these days, and we're looking for trends. What types of families, what types of circumstances are most likely to lead to an unfortunate incident where a child could die? And so, Eric, were they, you know, was that the intent to be able to harvest these reports and figure out to anticipate where the next trouble spot would be?
I think so. I think that, you know, as Andrea said, one goal was transparency, just to demonstrate that the agency was being forthright in its dealings with the public and its investigations. And the second was, as you say, to identify those patterns, not only to kind of just observe what was happening and for research purposes, but then to take that information and use it in a proactive way to try to prevent future deaths by seeing, all right, here are some of the things that are happening that we know are high risk. Here are some of the families that are experiencing those things right now, and so let's concentrate on those families. Let's put a lot of resources and time into it and see if we can prevent some of the fatalities. Some other states have been doing that. Texas, not so much. They say they're doing it now. But I think that, as you say, one of the purposes of these reports was to kind of force it to take a look at its past to help it in its future interactions with the public.
So, Andrea, Texas is leading the nation in the number of children who die from abuse and neglect. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
And so did we know that before these numbers were released, or now it's even worse than we thought?
No, I think it was pretty well out there. People knew what it was, and as Texas is, you know, one of the largest, most populous states, it's not surprising in terms of the raw numbers. If you look at it, I think it's per capita or per 100,000. Is that what it is? We are number 7 in the country for that.
Right, but y'all did break it down by counties, and that information is available on the website.
Yeah, it's a great website. I have to give credit to Andrew Chavez and Christian McDonald, our team. They were amazing.
So, Eric, the report, the first of the series came out on Sunday, just as the legislature was getting ready to go into the new session. Was that deliberate? Are you trying to get this on the legislative agenda?
Well, I wish I could say that we were that forward-thinking. I mean, I think our original intention was to get this out sometime in December before the end of the year, but as you know, these things tend to back up, and particularly when we're putting together, as Andrea said, if you take a look at the online presentation, you'll see that a ton of work went into that, and it just took a little longer than we anticipated. I mean, I think we were mindful that the legislature was meeting, and, you know, we always like to have some impact with our story, so the timing worked out. It wasn't necessarily done with that in mind.
We're talking about Child Protective Services in Texas, the agency that is supposed to be protecting our children from abuse and neglect. Apparently, they have been underreporting the homicides, the deaths of children, also incidents of investigators lying about cases that they've been working on, all sorts of other issues being revealed as an investigative report is being rolled out by the Austin American-Statesman. We're talking to the two reporters who have been driving this, and we invite your phone calls. If you've got a question or a comment, an issue about Child Protective Services, we'd like to hear it. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. This is The Source on KSTX, back in 1 minute. This is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. We're speaking with two investigative reporters from the Austin American-Statesman, Andrea Ball and Eric Dexheimer. They worked on a groundbreaking report about problems at Child Protective Services, unreported 655 deaths of children from abuse and neglect in the past 5 years. So, Eric, let me ask you, so if these cases are underreported, what does that mean in regards to criminal justice? Are these people who abused their children to death or neglected them and caused their deaths, are they not being prosecuted?
Well, part of the problem is that we don't know. So, excuse me, basically the numbers are that the Child Protective Services investigates 1,000 child fatalities a year. That goes up and down over the years. It's down to about 800 something now, is as high as 1,200 before. Of those, it determines that anywhere from about 250 to 150 are directly caused by abuse and neglect. So those are the ones that we get to see. Those are the reports that we based our reporting on. However, there are another 100 or so in any given year where the agency has determined that abuse and neglect had occurred, but then determined that it was not directly responsible for the fatality. Those are the ones we don't get to see. So the agency has a review process where they look at those first group, and the ones that are determined to be directly related, and they there's kind of a management evaluation of that, and if you know, they're deemed not to fit into that category, they take them off. But they don't do the second or the evaluation on that second group, if that makes some sense. So the bottom line is we don't know. You know, we don't know what we don't know. It's possible that some of these cases were caused by abuse and neglect. They don't receive the same level of agency scrutiny that the cases that are reported do. So it's hard to tell. You know, what we do know is that some of the fatalities that occurred, that are reported, that are public, were also, they bore similarity to some of the ones we learned about in the unreported group. So it's again, the short answer, it's hard to say.
So, Andrea, don't prosecutors or police departments frequently rely on CPS investigations of these children's deaths to find out, to determine whether or not there should be a criminal investigation?
I think they work in tandem. I don't think that the police solely rely on CPS to do that. I think when they're called out to a death, they automatically start investigating. But I'm sure that they work together, talk about history, talk about family dynamics and all that stuff. That way they can determine the scope of the problem.
Right. So when we talk about abuse from abuse and neglect, deaths from abuse and neglect for these children, what are we talking about? What kind of circumstances are we talking about, Andrea? What's like the number one case type?
They are most likely killed by blunt force trauma, which is the official way of saying they're
beaten to
death.
Injured.
They're beaten to death. Yeah, pretty much. It can be the head. It can be the body. It can be lots of different ways.
And
go ahead.
And no. And so, what things like sleeping, co-sleeping, also is that also a big problem, Andrea?
Yeah, co-sleeping is an issue, but it's not nearly as pervasive as children being beaten. You know, the thing that you can tell as you read these reports is that essentially, I mean, it may seem obvious, yes, it's poor parenting, but it's also, you can really see that these families are troubled to begin with. There's a history of mental illness or drug abuse, or these parents themselves were the victims of abuse. So they don't know how to be parents, and so they don't. And you will see the way these reports describe the abuse sometimes, just very clear that they are frustrated and don't know how to handle the typical frustrations of raising a child. So you'll see bite marks on a child, or you'll see children have been shaken so much that they're just critically injured. Just things that if they could channel that anger in a more productive way, obviously, we would be avoiding all this.
Let's go to the phone line. So number is 210-614-8980, and Hugh has called in. Hugh, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yeah, thank you very much for doing this topic and story. And I'm wondering if this is part of even a larger pattern when you include the Texas neglect of the education of children. Does this Texas government neglect children, period?
Okay, Hugh, thanks for that. Well, let's look at funding for CPS, Child Protective Services. Eric, how does Texas rank in that regard?
You know, the report that I saw that was most comprehensive and that I read about most recently was in terms of its prevention funding. It ranked, I want to say, behind 40-some of the states, and that's funding on strictly prevention programs. I mean, what we have seen is that the legislature has kind of been, they've gone back and forth in funding the agency. The funding was drastically cut about 8 years ago. It was restored somewhat a few years later, and then it's kind of been climbing back up to, I think, 2011 levels since then.
So we've seen some slashing of the budget in Austin, and Child Protective Services was not given a pass. They had to cut as well, and only now are they getting back up to levels where they were in the past. But people are wondering about, you know, you're saying that 50 CPS workers have been caught lying to prosecutors and ignoring court orders and falsifying state records. So that's alarming also, Andrea.
Yeah. What had happened was that information did not come out of the fatality reports, but it began to emerge as a pattern, and we ended up seeing that it did happen. So we basically looked at years' worth of reports by the Office of Inspector General and internal personnel reviews. And what we would see is generally caseworkers in these cases would say they had been to visit a child when a complaint had come in when they had not. And in some of the reports, you could see the caseworker saying, well, what do you want me to do? I had 50 cases. I couldn't be everywhere at once. And they think that the chance of getting caught is slim. So they just, you know, do what they have to do. I don't think that they go into the profession to be horrible people, to harm children, or intending to do poor jobs. I think it's a very stressful situation. It's a lot of work. It's hard work. And rather than and also when they don't get the work done, they get punished rather than getting the relief that they need. So they do what they can to keep their job, and it's the wrong thing.
And Eric, y'all document some of the issues with the high turnover rate with the CPS workers, caseworkers. So this shows you why that turnover rate is so high. They have a lot of cases. They get punished for not being able to meet these high expectations, right?
Yeah, I think that you guys have mentioned the Stephen report before in previous shows, or it's a report that the agency itself commissioned to kind of give it a top to bottom review, and they it came out in spring and early summer, and it documented the agency's long-standing problems with caseworker turnover. And one of the two interesting things came out of it. One is it noted that the caseworkers on average spent about a quarter to a third of their time visiting families. That is, most of the time was spent kind of on paperwork and handling policies and stuff like that. The other thing that came out of it was that while relatively low pay was a concern, it was not the major one. As Andrea referenced, it was low morale. It was problems with supervisors. It was trying to follow what the commissioner of the agency told us was just a ton of policies. I mean, policies on top of policies, endless blizzards of paperwork.
Right. And I guess, is that because the legislature keeps coming up with new rules that they have to follow? Or I mean, or is it's a bureaucratic nightmare, Andrea, for these workers? They want to be out in the field with kids, but instead they're tied to their desk.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it has to do with accountability and the agency trying to keep a paper trail to ensure that kids are followed and that rules are being abided by. But yeah, I mean, essentially they are chained to their desks and they are unable to go and see the family and essentially keep track of them, understand what's happening, see the warning signs, and instead they're drowning at their computers trying to get things in on deadline.
So, but Andrew, okay, go ahead, Eric.
I was just going to say another thing is that this agency, for obvious reasons, attracts the legislature's attention every 2 years. And so, you know, they've gone through a steady stream of kind of reforms and new beginnings and new iterations. And so they have, you know, new regulations and new laws with the best of intentions that are just kind of piled up on top of them. I think that they don't necessarily get rid of all the old ones when they add new ones.
Let's get a caller on the air with Julie. Julie, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, sir.
Go ahead.
Oh, well, basically, in reference to the caseworkers and their workloads, there's always been a lot of redundancy between what the caseworkers are held accountable for and what the case managers are held accountable for, because as a foster parent, which I am and have been for almost a decade, the case managers that work very closely with the foster parents are responsible for ensuring that we do all of the paperwork. And then, of course, we have caseworkers that will come to the home and visit us and make sure, again, that all the paperwork is done. It just seems like there should be some streamlining done that would alleviate at least one part of the caseworker's workload. Because I mean, I can't tell you how many kids I've had that have had turnover, probably as many as 10 caseworkers per child, and that's in maybe even a two-year time period. So the turnover rate is incredibly high.
All right, Julie, thank you so much for your call. Appreciate that. So, Andrea, the question I've got is that you're talking about frequent investigations by CPS, and then still a child dies. So the idea is if the CPS is looking at a case, then that death should be avoided, should be able to be prevented?
I don't think that's necessarily the case. You cannot, it's human behavior, and you can't predict it. People are volatile sometimes. People sometimes bad parenting is just going to happen and you can't stop it. But what you can do is keep tabs on a family regularly when you know that they're being that they're struggling. If you know that this particular family, let's just say, is having financial problems, or they're having a drug problem or an alcohol problem, if you're continuing to visit them, you can connect them with the services they need, possibly, if they're available. You can give them the support they need so things don't escalate.
So is the state too slow to pull kids out of problem families, Eric?
I don't know if you could say that they're too slow. You know, as we say in the story,
if you've got 655 deaths in the last 5 years, that's pretty bad.
It is pretty bad, and yes, there's no getting around that. But to be fair to the agency, it walks a razor-thin line between acting too aggressively and pulling out kids and unfairly and harming parents and families in that way, and moving too slowly and leaving kids in situations that might be too dangerous. You know, what we do want to get at with this series of stories is that in terms of identifying families that might be at higher risk than other families, the state could do a better job. That is, identifying those factors that may be stressing a family, maybe putting a child at risk of harm, as she said, drugs, alcohol, employment. One of the ones we identified was paramours, that is an unrelated romantic partner, particularly men who babysit while a woman works. Some other red flags are kids who have been previously removed from a house. All these are things that the agency could collect together and right. use predictively to identify families that are at a higher risk than others.
Eric Dexheimer, investigative reporter for Austin American Statesman, with Andrea Ball, also investigative reporter for The Statesman, doing some amazing reporter data journalism looking at Child Protective Services. This is The Source on KSTX.